everybody. I'm Scott, and welcome to the Shelfware Podcast. Today, I have Noah Clemens back with us to talk about 11/22/63. That's right. And Noah Clemens is from the BookTube channel, Everyone Who Reads It Must Converse.
Hello, that's right. Noah. Hey, Scott.
Hey, man.
How are you doing, bro?
Doing really good.
Very cool. Another awesome read.
Oh,
with
heck
you,
yeah.
Brother.
The last time that we were here, we were talking about Hyperion, all four novels in that whole series. We did two podcasts, and man, that was a lot of fun. And here we are for more, 11/22/63 by Stephen King.
Back for more. I can't get enough with you, Scott.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, fun. Very, very cool. So what we'll do, we'll synopsize this thing really quickly in a non-spoilery way, and then we're going to jump right in because there's a lot to talk about in here. It's a big old book, 850 pages or so, published in 2011. And it is about a time traveler who is convinced to go back in time. It wasn't his idea originally, but we'll talk about that. Convinced to go back in time to prevent the JFK assassination in Dallas,
that's
Texas.
Right.
Yep. Which that's what the title is, the November 22nd, 1963, which is when it took place. And the time travel has rules, you know, like time travel books do. But this fella has a portal. Every time he walks through it, he goes back to September 9, 1958. And he can stay as long as he wants. He ages while he's there. He goes back to his regular time. And only 2 minutes have elapsed when he returns. No matter how
long. 2 minutes every time.
Every
right.
time. No matter how long he was in 1958 or moving forward in time. He could stay 20 years and then go back. And only 2 minutes has passed in 2011.
Right.
And then the problem, though, is every time that he does go back, it resets. So
right.
anything
every
that,
time
every,
it starts again
yeah.
in 1958 there.
Right. So September 9, 1958 is the same every time he goes back there. And then his changes branch that reality off, you know, and we'll talk more about that. But whatever he changes from there forward becomes the new reality.
Right, and whatever he changed before is null and void.
Right, so that's the setup.
There's the backdrop.
That's the setup. So, you know, in a non-spoilery way, that's the setup. But this book is it is one of Stephen King's best novels, in my opinion. Definitely the best of his recent ones. Again, he wrote it in 2011. I just loved it. And there's not a lot of horror in this novel. We'll throw that out there in this period. It's really about life. This character, he goes back in time again to 1958. And then if he's going to try to stop the JFK assassination, he lives in that time all the way up to 1963, where he's got to do his attempt.
Right. He's got 5 years.
Yeah. So he lives that 5 years. And that 5 years is this novel.
That's right.
A lot of it. Yeah.
And I'll second what you said about it being a very enjoyable Stephen King novel, mm-hmm. One of the strongest and most enjoyable that I've read, and I've read a lot.
Right. I've read a lot, too. I calculated when we started reading it, and I've read 30 Stephen King novels. This is 31. So that's a lot of reading over
very
the years.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool.
Right, right.
My kind of guy.
Absolutely. So cool. I don't know if we want to say anything else about it on this in the non-spoilery section because
I'll just say before we go to spoilers that when it comes down to it, Stephen King does what Stephen King does here, and like you said, what he does is there's a setup, there's a setting, there's a very interesting setting, but what this is about is the characters and what they go through, and then you know you fall in love with these people. These characters that he's created, I'm reminded of like The Stand, you know, that kind of thing where, you know, you have this apocalyptic setting, but really what is going on is about these really human characters, and Stephen King does a great job with a smaller amount of characters in this book than The Stand, but you know, it's a chunk or so. I mean, he really works it out, and it's great.
Yeah, and I would say it's approximately twice the size of Salem's Lot, which is my favorite Stephen King novel, and this novel reminded me of that. Not because there's vampires, but because he talks a lot about a small town, living in a small town. It felt that way to me with, you know, the main character is a guy who's a teacher and a writer, and that's the same as Salem's Lot. So there's some similarities there that I found, and yeah, it was nice.
Very cool. Yep. And also, before we go to spoilers, you don't have to read it to get this thing. There is a Hulu series that I have seen.
I have not either.
I will be seeing it because this story is cool. I want to see how they adapted it. But I'm in no rush.
Yeah. You know? I was interested enough. I popped it on and I watched maybe 10 minutes of it and then stopped. And I was just, yeah, it's too soon after I read the book because I really liked the images that I had in my head. So, yeah, I'll definitely pick it up sometime, but I'm not in a hurry either.
Nice.
Yep, for sure. So let's jump into spoilers.
Let's do it, baby.
All right, man. So, yeah, go read the book if you're interested and you don't want to be spoiled, but here we go. Another thing I guess I should say is Stephen King thought of this novel a long time ago. I mean, it was even before his first novel, before the release of Carrie in 1974. So he was thinking about this in 1971.
What a powerful event. It was.
No question.
The country and people's perception of what could happen. No doubt. And yeah, in the afterword there, he wrote that it was just like too soon for him, you know, to really approach this and try to fictionalize it and write something with this kind of backdrop. So
yeah, for sure. And I think he was pleased that he waited. He should be because it's a great book. So whatever, but yeah, he said it was just too soon. So, time, you know, so the past events can be changed in this book. But he kept saying the past is obdurate, right? The past actually throws up obstacles to prevent itself from being changed. So when you're changing, it resists change, which implies to me that there's really one reality in what he's presenting here, and we're veering from that reality, and it gets difficult when that happens.
Yeah, when you mess with that, the universe responds almost in a survival to protect itself kind of way. It felt, and the gravity of the change dictates how much of an obstacle you're going to have to go through to affect that change.
Yeah.
So it seems.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So this fellow's name is Jake Epping, right? And he's a teacher, and near the very beginning of the book, he reads an essay written by, someone who he's teaching, a night class for adults, English.
Yeah, and adult GED class something, right? Yeah,
and somebody writes an essay. It's a janitor from a high school, I think, and the janitor writes about how his dad attacked his family, and this fellow survived it. And it was an incredibly touching essay.
But killed his entire family with a hammer.
Yeah, right.
It is so hardcore. And I will say that the beginning of this book is very, very strong and very fast. You're dropped right into it, and you're dropped into something very heavy with that. And then through the, you know, going through that heaviness with Jake Epping, you kind of are immediately aligned with him, and then he's thrown into this story, and you're along for the ride. It goes very, very quickly, the first 2, 3, 4 chapters.
Yeah, agreed. And then a little while later, Jake is at a local diner, and there's a guy. It's actually called Al's Diner, which a famous diner name. But he talks to this guy, Al, who asks him back to the diner, and then when Jake gets there, this guy stumbles out of the back and he looks way older than he did a minute ago or the day before. And that's where this time travel is happening. He said,
right.
There's a time portal in this guy's pantry, in the diner's pantry.
Right.
And he just explains that to Jake. And he's, I don't know if we know it at that exact moment, but it wasn't long after that that we realize that he's ill.
Right. Well, he just lays it on him. That's the thing, is that this diner is, you know, everybody knows about this diner. All the teachers would go there after their day and things like this. And there was a picture of the janitor mm-hmm. on the wall
yeah.
That he had taken when he had got his diploma. Everybody was proud. It's small town stuff, you know, and Al, who is a friend, but more, you know, he's an acquaintance slash friend to Jake Epping, but he calls him at work, tells him to go out there and just lays this on him and tells him straight up, go check it out. And, right. and he does, mm-hmm. he steps. I love how Stephen King does it. He's really good at doing these kind of interdimensional, he calls them thinnies in a lot of his work, where there's these places where different realities kind of commingle.
Yeah, yeah.
So him stepping into the pantry, and then all of a sudden he's kind of stepping downstairs that he can't see, but he can feel. And you kind of get this feeling, this kind of weird in-between spot. And then he comes on, you know, then he's on a solid floor again and not in the pantry anymore. He's in the same place physically,
mm-hmm.
but then he's in 1958.
Right. In 1958 in like a manufacturing plant of some type.
Right.
Yeah. So
there's a you know, a chain keeping people out. It says a pipe's busted, the eternal busted pipe that nobody fixes is walling off this little area. And he's back in 1958 and he has a day of it.
Right. Yeah. So he's got a day of it and then he comes back. Right.
Yeah. And he loves it and everything. And he comes back and he's like, he's still really, you know, is kind of doesn't know if he believes what just happened or not.
Yeah.
That it's what Al said or not.
Right.
But then Al shows him the notebook. He shows him this.
Yeah, so now, Al has spent a heck of a lot of time trying to figure out how to prevent the Kennedy assassination. And, you know, he goes back, he observes Lee Harvey Oswald, he's trying to figure all of this stuff out. And now that he is older and sick, he's like, I've got to recruit somebody to do this.
Right.
And he tries to talk Jake Epping into doing it.
Right. Well, yeah, he's a very effective at it, too. He lays it out in a very convincing way that to stop this one event would stop a lot of bad that happens in our world as a whole. But I want to point out just at first that when it comes down to him getting cancer, this kind of thing is never fully explained, but it's almost like, well, is that cancer part of this past being obdurate or not?
Right, right. That's the feeling because, that I got. It was something preventing him from doing what he was doing.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. It was never explicitly said, but that's how I felt about it.
Yeah, it definitely had that feeling, that's mm-hmm. for sure. So Jake goes back, and so he doesn't fully believe what's gone on, but there's also that Al told him the story of this girl that he had saved. Now, this girl, he didn't save her life. She was stricken to a wheelchair by being accidentally shot in the woods by a hunter, and Al, in his going back, had saved this girl's life. Or not saved this girl's life, but he saved her from getting shot that day and being stricken to a wheelchair for the rest of her life. So he shows that, or he says that he had done that, but then the picture that he shows Jake shows her in a wheelchair again, and that's when he really drives home the thing of, look, well, when you went through that portal, that's you reset it. So you reset what I had done. Hmm. And so now she's back in the wheelchair. And so whatever you do, that is what it's going to be. And if you come back, whatever you've done is going to be, if you go through again, is going to be, not happened anymore. And you're going to have to redo it or, choose a different course of action.
To experiment with this, he goes back in time to Derry, Maine to stop the killing of this guy's family that we've mentioned earlier.
Right, the janitor.
Right, Frank Dunning. Right?
Right. It's a wonderful scene. I mean, it's horrific.
Yeah.
So wonderful with a grain of salt there. Mm-hmm. But how he does it, because this really puts you in you're in a Stephen King novel. Not only does Derry come back up and you're in this really weird Derry that is in that in-between spot where Pennywise has been overcome by the young kids.
Yeah.
But not yet come back when they're adults. It's right in between in the story.
He sees Beverly and Richie.
Right. Yep. Bevy from the Levee.
Mm-hmm.
and they're dancing.
Yep.
And they're doing some dancing, and he actually talks to them and sees, and they see him.
Uh-huh.
And of course, there's that Stephen King thing where they kind of have an understanding. Everybody in Derry is very suspicious of each other. There's been a lot of bad things that have happened in Derry. Obviously, a bunch of kids being kids that disappear.
Yeah.
From Pennywise. We know it's Pennywise. It's never laid out in this book, but we know because of mm-hmm. it and all that.
That's right.
But So Derry is a very scary place and a very a very suspicious kind of place. But the kids, they see something in Jake that they not only trust him, but they actually give him some good advice and they send him in the right direction.
Yeah, that's just, but that's I will just say, fantastic.
Of course, in this, we cannot stress enough how unsuited Jake Epping is for this mission, because even in Derry, in that first time back, he's there to try to feel out everybody, and he's kind of following the guy. What you just said his name?
Dunning, Frank Dunning.
Dunning, right? Yeah. And so he's following them, but he's asking people stuff, and he's just not. He's no private investigator. He definitely doesn't know how to keep his head down and stay out of, be incognito and things like that. So when it comes down to him actually trying to stop Frank Dunning, somebody else who he has, kind of brought himself to the attention of as looking for Frank and watching him and stuff like that, shows up to try to stop him. And this kind of, that night is so horrific. What he goes through, because, and see, this is the first time Jake goes through. This isn't, he goes through, this is a test run. He's trying to see if he can actually save somebody's life. That's what he wants to test. So he knows that this family, and he goes to this house, and it is a brutal scene.
Mm.
Completely brutal.
Yeah. That it was.
And
man,
I feel like
this guy's attacking people
one.
With a hammer, man.
Oh yeah, and it says a hammer at uh-huh. the beginning, and we're talking about a hammer. Well, it's a sledgehammer.
Mm-hmm.
What he actually has is a sledgehammer. It's very, very brutal. And just the level of it was very, very high pitch, and I just couldn't.
Yeah.
I definitely took a break after that part,
and
just like, okay. He gets hurt pretty bad in the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
He does effectively save the family, except for one of the children, and then he can go back, and then he goes back.
Right.
And he sees if he was able to do it. That was one of the most parts up until the very end, of course, where I think that Stephen King showed the past being completely against what he was doing in the most effective way.
Right. Right. He finds out that the person that he saved, that was a janitor who had been hit with the hammer and is having issues, right?
Right.
Was saved, but the result of his life was he went to Vietnam and was killed.
That's right.
Yep.
He died a lot sooner. He died a young death in the war. And his sister, who is the little the Lucille Ball, that's super funny. They called her Little Lucille Ball.
Yeah.
She was like a phone, you know, worker, you know, just talking on the phone. She was part of some radio show or something, just her voice. And it was all about a projection. And there was that kind of, I want to say, sadness behind her situation as well, because what happened actually is they went through this really traumatic experience, didn't die, but it actually was not, you know, also not a positive to their life.
Right, right.
Their brother got killed in front of them, things like that. And it's just like, you know, he saved their life, but, you know, you don't get a sense that you're like, well, you know, now everything's better. It didn't work out like that.
Right. Yeah. So he's taken all that in, which is, you know, again, you know, showing us that time is resistant, you know, that the, whatever's happened here, it's going to resist some change. And then Al commits suicide, right? I mean, he's old, he's sick. But he commits suicide.
It's a lung cancer is right. What I believe it is. It was, he's in a lot of pain.
Yeah. He doesn't have long. Beginning. Right.
He doesn't have long and it's tough for him to keep going. Yeah. And he just really wants to, know that what he, you know, what he's giving to Jake Epping, is something that he's going to, you know, move forward with. This is something that Al, you know, essentially gave his life for.
Right. And then that makes Jake Epping make a decision. It's like, okay, right. Am I going to do this or am I not going to do this? And he decides to do that.
He's so, going to do it.
Yep, he's going to do it. Full on.
Full
right.
commitment. Not 5 years.
That's right.
He had 5 years to stop an assassination.
Right.
And change the world. And so here's our superhero, right?
Right, right. Absolutely. And he's armed with a notebook that's full of notes from Al's previous visits.
Right.
And, he goes back through.
I want to, you know, the second time when he goes through, you know, I love how Stephen King does it, because now he doesn't have to do everything that he did before. He doesn't have to research. He doesn't have to get into dairy and all this figuring stuff out, because he knows it all already. Right.
Right. And remember, and this is not a time situation where he's seeing himself do the things he did last time. Right. It completely resets.
Right. So, it's completely reset. Nobody yep. knows him. Nobody's ever mm-hmm. heard of him. He knows, you know, he buys the same car. He knows what car he wants. And he sets himself up the second time through. But he doesn't get into anything, and he actually waits at a place where he knows where Frank Dunning is going to go and pay respects to his dead parents at a cemetery, and he just waits there and kills him. So now in this timeline, that somebody just murdered their father, the family. Well, and they don't know who, they don't know. It's an unsolved crime. Mm-hmm. And their dad was just murdered.
Right.
And that's it. Well, they, and you know, and nobody knows what would have happened other than that, except for our boy Jake. So, you know, there's that kind of dichotomy where you're like, well, this guy's Jake's a murderer now. And now he's not a murderer in cold blood. Uh-huh. It's not like that, but he is a murderer.
Yeah. And yeah, it gets tough, doesn't it? It's like, is it self-defense, you know?
Yeah. Right. Well, right. In this timeline, it wasn't self. It wasn't anything. This guy shows up to pay respects to his parents that had died and get shot and then dragged into the mausoleum and left there. And then that's it. And then Jake is off to Texas.
What just popped in my mind was
he's off to Florida.
That's right. First. That's right. What just popped in my mind was Minority Report by Philip K. Dick.
Right.
Preventing crime by predicting it and arresting the person that's going to do it.
Right.
You know?
And in there, they actually imprison and incapacitate somebody in a futuristic way, but it would be imprisonment. Would it be justified to kill somebody to stop them from doing it?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I do. Same kind of thing, but yeah, you're just like, man, well, I've seen this movie and I know that he's going to kill his family. Yeah.
Right.
Just, it's a tough deal. And now, now he's got the bigger one where it's like, JFK, Lee Harvey Oswald,
right.
But you left him in Florida. What's he doing in Florida?
Well, he gets like a beach house. He knows he's got to waste time. He's got all these years. He's got 5 years to go. So he wastes a lot of time, but he makes a bet with a bookie. That is a big bet that he shouldn't have necessarily pushed.
It was Yankees in seven, after falling behind by three. it was something outrageous that actually happened, but no one could ever predict.
Right.
Yep.
And he does, and he gets, 5-1 odds on it or something, and plates and makes a big bet.
Mm-hmm.
So, then he's marked, people know him. And so that's why I say again.
Yeah, that goes right to what you were saying about him being unfit for this, because he's not doing it right. He's like, you can do this in a way that you won't be noticed, but instead he's doing it in a way that gets him noticed.
Exactly right. Mm. I mean, why not bet, a 100 or 1,000 small times and make your money?
Yeah, right.
Rather than one big payoff, or because essentially what he does is he has a book that's like Back to the Future 2, Biff. He's got an almanac. He's got a book that tells him, all the sports outcomes for the last, for the last 30, 40 years or something like that. So he's got a book that tells him all that kind of stuff, and he takes it back just to have this money making when he needs it. But see, along with this kind of thing where, Stephen King plays all these cards. There's the gambling and the kind of getting caught up in the fun of that and making a big bet and having a payoff and all that kind of stuff. But then there's also like the intuition where he just felt something and he's like, okay, my time is up here. And that's when he goes to Texas.
Yeah.
And it turns out, later on he hears, I guess he makes a call or something, and there's some information that gets back to him where his Florida beach house was burned to the ground like the week after he left. Mm-hmm. And he knows that it was the bookies that did that, that there was this kind of feeling of that he had screwed them in some kind of way.
Right.
So, Stephen King plays all these things and very, very perceptive, very cool to just be able to, what it does is it builds a very human experience where a lot of things are going on and you see that you're not going to keep all this together. He would have to be trained to be a private eye or, this kind of spy kind of person, somebody he would have to be trained to be able to pull this off well.
Right.
And he's an English teacher.
Yeah.
So we're watching an English teacher bumble through trying to do this kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, right. While the universe is pushing against him.
Right.
Same deal. So So, yeah, so now he's in Texas, and Dallas, Texas is where he's got to be to learn about Lee Harvey Oswald and what he's doing. And one of the problems that he's got is that he doesn't know for sure that Lee Harvey Oswald is the only guy that was right. involved. So he can't just find Lee Harvey Oswald and kill him. He's right. got to wait until the moment. And it's like he said that during the book where it's like he's got to fiercely defend the status quo. I mean, he says something like that. I've got to fiercely defend everything that's supposed to happen so that he'll be where I need him to be right. when well, I know that he'll be
staying,
there, right?
Yeah. yeah. It's staying out of his path and, mm-hmm. and not letting him, not affecting him in any kind of way so that everything that's in Al's notebooks stays true.
And then at the same time, he himself goes to a small town in Texas and lives a life, falls in love, and is as entwined with that small town as a person That's could right. be.
That's you know, right. And so know? And so what it is there's this, Al has in his notebooks, there's this one incident that happens that Al is pretty much convinced that Lee Harvey Oswald is the one who takes this shot at a general and tries to assassinate him, but misses. It's a happening. I don't know if it's a historical fact. I wouldn't doubt if it is, because this is where Stephen King obviously did a lot of research for this book. Lee Harvey Oswald feels like Lee Harvey Oswald. You really get a sense of this kind of inadequate, riling against the world kind of person. But he's there, and he gets these bugs, and he bugs these lamps, and he's actually kind of, he's living across the street from Lee Harvey at some points, and he's living underneath the apartment of Lee Harvey at another point. But what he's doing is he's just, at this point, this is a major, big middle part of the book, and this is where we really, you know, where Stephen King goes right into character development. We see our boy fall in love. Shouldn't be doing that. You're here on a mission. You're here on a mission, brother.
Yeah.
But you can't choose who you fall in love with or when it happens, right?
Absolutely, and I think this is one of the probably best love stories I've ever read Stephen King write. It's very real. Characters For are sure. human. I mean, it's really good.
I will definitely, I'm definitely on board with that, brother. Mm-hmm. It's just you cheer for them, you hurt with them, you're really just there with them. They're both teachers. She's a transplant from Georgia, baby.
Mm.
From right where I'm at, she's from Georgia, but she's a transplant from there. She moves to this small town in Texas outside of Dallas, and she's a librarian, a school librarian, and he's on the payroll as an English teacher, and he ends up, you know, they put on this play. they do Of Mice and Men, right?
Yep.
and they're going to football games, and they're falling in love, and they're learning about each other's past. Well, he's learning about her past.
Yeah. You know, that's funny. That's another echo from Salem's Lot. In Salem's Lot, Ben Mears' old teacher was directing a play that those kids were in. Anyway, it just popped in my head as another shade or shadow right. or echo, right? An right. echo, right. as they keep saying in these in this book here, echoes.
Yeah, a harmony.
Harmonies, a harmony. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is. He's characterizing it as harmonies, you know, uh-huh. when he sees something and that he's seen before. And yeah. Sadie, he starts seeing that she looks like Dunning's wife.
Right.
And things like that. Just weird
harmonies. Just weird, strange harmonies, right.
And this is something that
I wanted to ask you about, you know, because I know that you've read the Dark Tower series and I have not. Right. Are these concepts of the harmonies, and we haven't talked about the Yellow Card Man, but are these ideas existing in Dark Tower?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. The only kind of parallel or the only kind of harmony I saw with the Dark Tower was that, okay, so Sadie is actually, she's left her husband, and she's not divorced, but she's left him, and he was a real Puritan kind of, you know, not affectionate, not at all looking to build a family or anything like that, or even have sex with her.
Mm-hmm.
She was a virgin. She's a virgin when our boy Jake meets her, even though she's been married for years, things like that. It's just a real messed up kind of relationship that they had. And Jake sees, and that's one of the harmonies. He's like, hey, you know, you need to look out for this guy because he's going to show up one day. I have a feeling, and the feeling is one of those kind of harmonies, you know, the Dunning catastrophe, you know, and it's just this kind of thing where he has a feeling that he's going to show up one day. Well, you know, he does. What it is, and his car is a Plymouth station wagon, right? And he keeps saying that it's white over red.
Yeah.
That it's white on the top and red on the bottom. And that is Stephen King. That's worked out really well in the final book of the Dark Tower. That white is Stephen King's symbol of good as far as the color is concerned, and red is the evil, the Crimson King.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of his works, white over red is what is symbolizing that struggle. When you see white and red together, then you know what you're looking at is where everything's going to come to a head.
I'm reminded of the cover for Insomnia.
Exactly right.
Yeah,
exactly.
That is right. Related. Yep. Huh? Interesting.
It is related for mm-hmm. sure.
Cool.
It's called out as that. So it's an amazing thing that he's doing there. But so Jake Epping is living like a double life, and he shouldn't be doing that. I mean, like what he should be doing is focusing on his directive, his mission. But now he's living this double life where he's thinking about, you know, building a world with this woman and never going back to the present and all that kind of stuff. And then he's essentially sneaking away, not telling her what he's doing. He says he's going to research for his book. She knows it's a lie. And he's following Oswald, and he's trying to figure this out. And when Oswald when the shot is taken on that general and misses, it's inconclusive.
Mm-hmm.
The evidence, what he hears on the tape and everything, it still doesn't let him know for sure if Oswald acted alone and took the shot on that general or not. And so it's inconclusive. And when it comes down to it, then our boy Jake has to continue to just watch Oswald. He can't engage. He can't take, because it's not fully known whether or not Oswald acted alone in JFK assassination.
Right. Yet. He's got to watch him all the way to 1963.
Right. And all then the way to
November
and that's
when, 22nd.
Yeah. Right. So he has this horrible, horrible luck with that. Maybe that's part of the past being obdurate as well, because it's the kind of thing where the bug doesn't pick up the conversation well and things like that for some, you know, just weird reasons. It doesn't give him the information that he needs.
Right.
And then Sadie's husband shows back up, and in another horrifying evening, he essentially commits suicide, but not before he brutally disfigures Sadie beyond repair.
Mm-hmm.
Disfigures her face beyond repair. It's very gruesome. And now our boy Jake starts thinking about taking her to the future with him. It's just not the move. All of these things, you know, it's never the move.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just riling when I'm reading that, all these right. kind of parts. I'm like, dude, stop. Like, stop messing with these people. Just cut your losses.
I mean, that it he made me feel right there with him. You know, I understood his motivation and what he was thinking, and I wanted her to be okay.
Right.
You know?
Right. And definitely, you know, he was already full on committed and in love, and now he's looking for a way. He's like, well, if I tell her and if we go forward and I do what I got to do with 11-22-63, after that, I'll bring her to the future with me where they can repair this damage, this yeah. Disfigurement. And so, you know, give it, you know, 60 years of advancement. So,
yeah, right. So, yeah, it's fascinating. Everything that he does all the way leading right up to that day, the day of the JFK assassination. There is a lot of historical information that is sprinkled in there that I don't remember Stephen King doing before, maybe in just bits and pieces. But, you know, I actually learned some things about Dallas, Texas, you know, and basically the United States at that time
right.
that he was talking about too. And how difficult some people found it to have John F. Kennedy be the president.
Right.
Yeah. And I even looked up, the presidential election,
especially in Texas.
Yeah. Especially in Texas. and I looked up that presidential election, and man, was it close, you know? So it's just kind of a, you know, again, echoes, harmonies. And he wrote this back in 2011. So he wasn't, it felt like, you know, if he had written this in the last 4 years, it would have felt like he was responding to the political situation today. But he wrote it in before 2011. I mean, it was published in 2011, so it's remarkable in that way. It's definitely a book for this time,
right? And I think it's a testament also to the fact that, you know, as much as people, want to, you know, say things are different. Oh, well, things are different now. Things are different now. There's always a lot of work to do.
Yeah, no question. No question.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, the 1960s were brutal.
Brutal.
Yeah, just, you know, politics. I mean, look at the assassinations that happened in the 1960s. I mean, just devastating.
Right.
So,
everything was so polarized.
Right. Absolutely. And so now, I mean, we're getting up right up on it, you know. So November the 22nd, 1963, right?
Almost.
Yep. So,
because what goes on here is like Sadie's disfigurement and all the medical bills and stuff is piled up so much that Jake thinks he needs to go make another big bet.
And a ridiculous one, too.
And a ridiculous bet. And he goes to a guy who is a cousin, and he knows it, of the bookie that already had problems with him.
Right.
In Florida, and he still just goes through with this bet. I mean, I saw it coming from a mile away. I can't believe that.
And why didn't he? It was like I kind of felt like he kind of did, right? It was like I'm ignoring this now.
Right. It's almost like, I'm just doing what I got to do, and you resign yourself to what you got to do.
Yeah.
I kind of got this kind of feeling of him just saying, well, you know, it's not going to kill me, so I'm going to do this, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
But, I mean, he is, you know, long story short, he makes this ridiculous bet. And not just that, he makes a ridiculous bet, and he tells Sadie all about it. And he uses this as a way to convince her and show her that he actually is from the future. He actually is on this mission. And he convinces her, and she now knows, and not just her, but also another teacher, the PE teacher, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Or yep. The coach.
Right.
Is that right? The
I coach think so. From yep.
They both know that he's from the future. He's already said way too much stuff that they're now convinced that, like, if he's not from the future, then something's going on where he can tell the future or whatever it is. But he's not your normal person. And then he gets brutally beaten to the point where he almost dies. It was so brutal, man.
Mm.
There's so much brutal, and you say there's no horror in this book, and I would say I would concur with the way that Stephen King usually does horror. But there is horror in this book in a way of, if you can't take brutal violence, three on one, unfair, brutal violence.
Yeah, there was three incidents in this book, right?
Right.
Three
of
incidents.
Just complete brutal, gory and hard to stomach violence. It's that's one of the things. I think I had said it even in one of our maybe on the in our talking about it and stuff. But that's the kind of thing that gets me more than anything. That where my heart just drops when I see, even in a movie, a depiction of somebody just getting, you know, in an unfair match, just getting beat. And that, you know, to the point that they might die. They're maybe just begging for it to stop. There's no defense, this kind of thing. And it's just, it really, really gets me. And that was really, really tough. So, there it is.
Yeah. I hear you. Mm. Yeah, for sure.
So he's in that. That's our setup. He's in a place where he's in recovery. And his leg is completely busted in a big way. And he's still in recovery from that incident with Sadie, who is, she's recovered, but she's gone through a couple of surgeries. And then we're coming up on the date, 11/22/63.
Mm-hmm.
He is not in a place to be really, you know, going at this guy and going for this.
And at this point, I was realizing that all of this stuff was the universe protecting itself from this horrible event. Right. It was like, this needs to happen.
Right.
These are things that are occurring to prevent, Jake from doing what he's trying to do.
Right.
Which is amazing.
Is Sadie's husband there because of Jake?
Yeah.
Yes. In more ways than one, because he has a relationship with Sadie, and it might be a jealousy kind of thing, but then it also might be the universe.
Yeah.
Are these bookies there beating the hell out of him because of what? Well, it's because he's making bad decisions and doing what he's doing, but also that he's there and the universe is right up against him.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild.
It's wild. It's very, very interesting.
Where the hero is like, the hero is hurt, where the hero has something that happens to him that is an affliction that, that he has to overcome at a crucial moment. Stephen King does that in a lot of his works.
Oh yeah. Yep. So yeah, all the things that he had to go through up to that point, and then just getting to the building was brutally difficult to get to the depository at the right time. He gets there just exactly at the right time.
Yeah, what was it, like two car accidents? It was like a bus accident, a car accident first, and then a bus accident, then they steal a car. And that car is like on its last leg and it breaks down, you know, a couple of miles before they get where they need to go.
And then what happens is, you know, he gets there in the book depository. He manages to stop Oswald from shooting, but instead Oswald shoots at Jake, but misses Jake and hits Sadie.
That's right.
Yeah. Horrible.
Right. Right. It's horrible. And it's such a high pitch scene as well. That's where it definitely is just thing after thing thrown at, because Jake and Sadie are together, because Jake couldn't do this on his own at this point.
Right.
And just so much obstacle in their way, and they just keep going at it, and you just see them both just saying, we're going to do this even if it kills us.
Mm-hmm.
And it might. And so they go there, and it was heartbreaking because Jake, you know, effectively stops the assassination, but loses the love of his life at that point.
And not only does he lose Sadie, but something's gone screwed up with the universe. You know, I can't remember. Does he know before he steps back to modern times? Does he know? Was there an earthquake before that?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
That's okay. So I dimly remember that. So there's a huge earthquake in LA that kills hundreds of thousands of people, right? Huge earthquake in LA. And he knows that didn't happen. So he's like, you know, gosh, did I cause that? How could I have caused an earthquake? But did I? Right. So then he goes back into the present or off to the future or whatever, and realizes, some of this is a wasteland. I mean, there's something is horribly wrong.
Oh, and it's gone all to hell. Then. Right. Yeah. I mean, there's been like a nuclear holocaust or something. There is, it's all wrong. I mean, there's everybody has radiation poisoning,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's just, there's society is at a very low level. It's like, a mix between, you know, a mutants walking the streets and a Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where these like roving bands of gangs that just are, you know, fighting to fight or to get what little canned goods or something they can get because there's not even infrastructure anymore. There's not even grocery stores and things like that.
Yep,
it's really, really bad.
It is bad.
And he meets up with, you remember, he meets up with the janitor.
Uh-huh, right. And the janitor, he tells him everything that's happened.
Yeah, and how horrible everything is.
Yeah.
And that's when he goes, he decides he's going to go, well, he already had decided he's going to go back because what he's going to do is he wants to be with Sadie.
Yeah.
So he had already decided he's going to go back and he's going to stop, you know, Sadie from dying and all this kind of thing and stop JFK again or whatever it might take. But then he starts seeing that this thing is way bigger than anything that he can wrap his head around.
Yeah, and this was really interesting stuff. I mean, you know, he's talking to the yellow card man, right? But there's somebody there with a green card. Yeah, and really it's like, again, you know, in my opinion, my interpretation of what's being said is that there is one reality. And when they go back and they change stuff, those agents have to keep all the realities in their head somehow. And there are these strings that they kind of have to rearrange. I mean, something like that, there's physical things happening to the universe that seem to be bypassing what was real or who knows what. And, it's just messed up. It's just messed up. And so,
it drives home. The conversation with the green card man at the end really gives you the kind of idea that, any of these changes, especially big ones, are all negative.
Uh-huh.
They're all negative.
Yeah.
In the big scheme, in the big picture of things, that, you know, human beings die. Human beings go through hardships. Some of them live a life in a wheelchair. Some of them, you know, they have hard lives.
Mm-hmm.
But to change something from whatever this is, the natural course of events is going to be all negative. And he starts to see that. And then he goes back, right?
Right.
he goes mm-hmm. back. That's when he talks to the green card man there.
Uh-huh.
And when he goes back and when he's like, and because this guy is like a gatekeeper,
mm-hmm.
He doesn't have any power. What he kind of does is, like you said, he's there to kind of, I guess, through a mental human, you know, through a mental thing, he's at least trying to hold the universe together by lending a human consciousness to knowing what's happening instead of just the person that's making the changes.
Right, right.
It's really strange.
It really is strange. And that's what made me think it was connected to Dark Tower somehow. That strangeness, which I think exists in Dark Tower, even if it's not this strangeness, there's something about, I think you were saying in Dark Tower, it's like, you know, there are places where all the stories are or something like that. Like everything.
Well, see, the Dark Tower, how it's set up is, mm-hmm. is that the Dark Tower has all these different levels on it. And it's almost like the kind of things we've got into with Borges, where one thing, or like the Dark Tower, what it is the entire universe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a thing that's in the world that is actually a representation of the entire universe. So it's a symbol, but it is a physical thing. And the Dark Tower in Roland's world might be a flower in a vacant parking lot in our world, and might be a tiger in a different world. And that's the kind of thing, is like, it doesn't have to be a tower, but that's what it is in the Dark Tower series.
Interesting.
And on each level of that tower is an alternate reality, is another dimension. Well, these dimensions, these realities are all fictional universes as well as real universes and things like that. So Roland's universe, the Dark Tower series, Roland is our main character. His universe is one of these levels. And our world is one of these levels as well, a different one.
Mm-hmm.
But they kind of interact, right? Because we have Roland's world in our world by being in the books. And we can experience that. And Roland kind of bleeds over into our world as well. And there's that kind of thing. And Stephen King plays with that to very dramatic effect in Dark Tower series. It's awesome. There is those kind of things. But as far as like the actual mechanism of the strings and time travel, it's not necessarily, I don't see an analog, but there is time travel in the Dark Tower series as well.
Cool. Okay.
A different mechanism. For it.
Right.
Very
cool. So yeah. So Jake actually does make the decision to go back and put everything right, because the world's wrong, right? So he does go back, it resets.
And he's kicking around the idea of going to do this or that.
There's somebody there, one of the card men. I can't remember what color his card was at this point. But he's telling Jake, man, you've got to go back to the regular time. Just go back and it'll be fixed. But Jake, even then, is like, gosh, I just want to go see Sadie.
Right. He's deathly scared of changing anything.
Uh-huh.
He's deathly scared of doing anything because he sees what a mess the world has become because of what he's done.
Yeah.
But he's in love and he loves this woman. And so he actually does go back, you know, and he just goes back.
Yep.
And then he drives to Texas and sees Sadie, and she is an old woman and he is not as old, but older than he would be if he didn't spend 5 years in the past. But he goes to her and he sees her and he researches this kind of thing. We're glossing over it. There's a whole lot to this. Stephen King does a very, very great job of hashing out all these characters and the way that Jake wants to find out about her, but he doesn't want to cause any problems. And so he actually sees that she had this great career as a teacher. Now she was an activist. She was, you know, there was pushes for her to actually be, you know, run for public office or something.
Yeah,
but she decided not to and just stay in the community building kind of capacity. And he goes to the dance at the high school where she's at.
Celebration for her, right?
Yeah, and she's a old, you know, she's an older woman, older than him by quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
But then they share a dance, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful ending. And what I love what he says, because he said, "Oh, she goes, because he knows too much." He's saying all these things, and he's getting her to dance, and she's like, "I used to dance this dance," and he's like, "Yeah, I know you did, you know." And she's like, "Well, who are you? Like, you know, do you know who I am? Who are you?" And he's like, "Yeah, I knew you in another life."
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so beautiful, you know, this kind of thing of sharing these moments, and this is what we're seeing Jake's life. And Jake's life is completely different than every other person's life that's ever lived.
Yeah.
Because of his unique position. And you still feel like, you know, that there's something worth it there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely right. Yeah. And it's beautiful. It really is. I mean, it's just stunning, you know, how he ended it. And,
the end was pretty beautiful, and I think it's great how, you know, essentially, he didn't change anything.
Uh-huh.
He didn't even save the boy's family.
Right.
No, he didn't. At the end of it, he didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Because our world is already on its best course possible. It's up to us every moment, every day, to try to make the kind of world that we want. And if we don't get it right the first time, well, you know, more opportunities will arise. You can't go back. You can't change things. People mess up. People make mistakes. Bad things happen. And that's just life. It's a real tale of acceptance.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Yep. And you're right. Yep. Definitely.
Wow. Sobering.
Yeah.
It really is a sobering.
It is a sobering thing, you know. I do mm-hmm. like the fact, you know, that there's, you know, one reality. I like that. I like that more than, you know, the myriad of stories where there's just multiple universes. You know, every time you make a decision, it branches. Right. I don't personally believe that.
Right.
But yeah, so I thought this was a pretty satisfying and not very typical.
Right. We do want to say, with all the accolades and saying how great that the ending is great and that is very satisfying and all that kind of thing, that we can thank Joe Hill for that one.
That's right. That's right. Way to go, Joe.
Yeah. Way to go, Joe.
Yeah.
Stephen King, I'm sure thanks you uh-huh. very much as well.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. What a good one.
Very good, man. Scott. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you very much.
Doing another read through with me, man. It's always yeah. great to read with you, brother.
Oh, you too, man. I just enjoyed the heck out of this. So we must do and another
with it
one
being
sometime.
So big, we really crushed it.
We did.
With it being so, you know, 850 pages. Yeah,
pretty awesome. Quick read. Pretty quick read, nonetheless. It was riveting. The entire thing was riveting.
It really is.
Yeah, it was just like, man. I was always looking to get
back to it. So many weird, strange things happen that you're just like, well, what does that mean? You know, when the yellow card man is calling him Jim Law. And then in the stadium, you know, years later, and as he's having his relationship with Sadie and they're in the football stadium, they're chanting Jim Law. Jim Law, Jim Law. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
What does that even mean? And why would this guy even know that? You know, mm-hmm. but
right.
It's just there's so many cool, interesting things about it to keep you just going. I'm glad I read it.
Yeah, me too. Very glad I read it. Well done, Stephen King. Still at it. Love
That's
it.
Right.
Very good. All right. Well, thanks again, Noah, and we'll see everyone else next time.
You got it, Scott. Okay. Thank you very much, brother.